And you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, the station that loves you. And this is Felicia. And Marshall and Jake are in here with me for Kauai Soapbox. And we will, on our show today, we'll have Kelly Kelsey from the Wisdom Warriors of the World.
Weavers.
I'm sorry. I can't believe I said that wrong. Where is she? Wisdom Weavers of the World. I probably had a little mistake there because I'm also having Edward Kawamura, who is the president of the Veterans Center, and he does really wonderful things, and we'll be learning a little bit more about what is coming up for the veterans. And in the meantime, Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Store, Pono Pies, and we're going to hear about helping to promote our station fund drive that's coming up. And we love you all who helped to keep us on the air. You're very, very important to us.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker. Rarely reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Pono Pies, dedicated to restoring breadfruit as a major food crop in Hawaii. Gluten, dairy, and GMO-free. Delicious Pono Pies, available at health food stores throughout Hawaii. PonoPies.com, 808-283-3718.
KKCR's Fall Fund Drive will begin on November 2nd. Starting now, you are invited to make a tax-deductible donation to KKCR, which will automatically enter you into our Early Bird Drawing. The Early Bird Drawing winner will win a two-night stay at the majestic Hanalei Bay Resort in Princeville. Mahalo nui to the Hanalei Bay Resort for their generous donation to our Early Bird Drawing winner and for supporting Kauai Community Radio. KKCR is volunteer-driven and listener-supported. We depend on your support to stay on the air. Our goal for this drive is $60,000. Help us get there by making a sustaining or a one-time donation today. For more information on the Early Bird Drawing Prize and to donate securely online, visit kkcr.org or call us at 826-7774.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. The Wave Riders make such a big difference, and it's really a good way to get your name out. And every way that people come in and support Kauai Community Radio helps to affect change and make this island a better place. And today, I want to begin, last week we did this, and the week before, acknowledging some of the losses that we've had. It seems like, you know, death is a part of life, and sometimes we have really rough circumstances. And a big thing that happened this weekend was our whales. They estimated about 60 pilot whales came into Kalapaki Beach. And I drove there and tried to go over and help, but it was a big crowd, and they didn't want miscellaneous people down there. So I went on up to the Queen Emma's event, but I was there, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago when we had a bunch come into Hanalei Bay. I don't know how they did a count. They said 139, and I had the honor of being a part of helping get them out. Our canoe club helped get them out, and it happened to be 3 days after the Navy had this big boom box back then where they were. It was the third day after they started it to hear the sound ping against California and Alaska. And I think over on the western side of the Pacific, you know, to test for global warming, to see if the ocean was getting warmer. But, you know, you think, wow, you're going to hit something like that. It's going to, you know, knock out these whales or other creatures that live in the neighborhood. So that was what happened like 10 years ago.
And what happened just now? I actually have been a little out of the loop. Back up.
The Navy says, "Hey, we weren't doing anything," and
But what actually happened? There was a whale.
Oh, okay. Yeah. About 60 of them. The pilot whales are deep water whales.
Yeah.
And they came into Kalapaki Bay, and there was, I was told, about 13 or so that were on the beach.
Really?
And three of them perished, and they pushed.
Five, actually.
Well, I was going to correct that. Yes, yeah. Five died all total, but three of them died, and they pushed out the others. That's when I got there. So right. The three were there, and then the others were out in the water, and then... But then they came back in because they're very social creatures, and we don't really know what happened. But then two more died in that afternoon.
How did they push them back in?
How do you push them back in with your hands?
Right, so they got a whole bunch of people and just.
Well, I actually wasn't on the beach doing it, but right. Typically, yes, that's what is. That happens, and a number of the people who are on our show were among those doing it. The Kia'i, like Kamu Hepa and Noah Espirito Mao and Punohu Kekalua, he was there. There was our Kia'i, our Hawaiian protectors, were down there at like 5 in the morning and saw it, and then the DLNR and the Coast Guard and others, kind of joined in. The Niamalu Canoe Club helped get them out. When we had done it out of Hanalei Bay, that was the canoe club, but they weren't on the beach. They were in the water. And so it's really hard once they are beached because it's hard on their circulation. Their circulation isn't designed to have all that weight on it. But I'm not an expert. And I know there's been a lot of speculation where, there's a convergence of factors of there had been a lightning storm hitting the waters. That's one thing that was said. People are always suspicious in the Navy or the Army. I did get a text almost immediately from, I won't say who, but somebody in the Navy said, "We promise it wasn't us," before it was even really out there.
Right.
And, but that was a, friend that's, and then other people are considering, is there any impact from the poison on Lehua Island? Of course, the people who dropped that poison said, no, it's not them. But we don't know. They're doing what's called a necropsy, which is, like an autopsy. And it depends upon what you look for. It's not always easy to find out why something dies. But
I wonder, do we know, did beachings of whales happen, say 100 years ago? Or is that something that's just started happening since man's been doing more funky things?
I think it's happened, Yeah. I mean, I know when I was 21, I helped push out some whales, and we literally were physically pushing them out. And people put have a boat, and they try and tie, it's kind of like pulling a car. You tie a big webbing, strapping around the tail, and pull them backwards and out. And there's all different kinds of ways, and people are putting water on them and comforting them. And I don't think that. Strandings have just started happening, but it's always nerve-wracking when it does. It's not common.
Right. So maybe, but we don't necessarily need to look around for a villain or a cause. If it's something that's happened through time, over the ages.
I think there's certainly value in investigating it, but my nature is to not make an accusation until we know, because we don't know.
Right.
So, but we are sad, and I think it was a really heavy energy. I know that it was surreal for me to leave that experience and then go to Emalani.
Well, how was that?
Great.
Yeah.
It was a hula event and the Emalani Festival. That was really great. I want to acknowledge California's continuing to burn. So that keeps getting rougher and rougher. Montana, where I have a number of relatives, it's been snowing there. So the fires are pretty much out. I have friends in Ireland who are right on the front end of where that hurricane came through, which is their first hurricane ever. So
I heard it's like the fifth in 100 years kind of thing.
Oh,
but
first,
the biggest storm.
The biggest storm. But at least my friends in the south there seem to, everybody was all kind of like braced, but it wasn't too bad. And then the other thing that I wanted to acknowledge as we're coming and we have a song, I've been glad that, you know, KKCR is like a family. We are a family, and all of us programmers care about each other and love each other. And Richard Sagum, who has One World Radio, he passed away this weekend. His shows are on Mondays. And so we're sad. That's a reasonable way to feel. It's hard when people go. I mean, I know it's part of life. And what we'll hear from maybe even Ed Kawamura in a little bit is that, you know, there's, I'm sure, a Buddhist perspective. I mean, in any spiritual perspective, that happens. But anyway, he's well-loved. And Kelly picked this song out for him. Do you want to say what the song is and why you chose this song?
Sure. I had the honor of helping here at KKCR before his show on Mondays occasionally, and he and I had a strong connection about one of our favorite musicians, Sun Ra, who is one of the funkiest jazz musicians ever in the universe. And so I felt it was appropriate. This song's called Door of the Cosmos and represents some of the creative energies that Richard represents for me. So sending this out to Richard and to Sun Ra and all the beautiful creative beings that have shared their time with us. Mahalo.
So let's hear it. So it's called Crossing the Door
of the Cosmos.
Door of the Cosmos.
The night interested me so that I dared to knock at the door of the cosmos. The night interested me so that I dared to knock at the door of the
transition into the next phase of your spirit and your soul. And so thank you, Kelly, for sharing that song by Sun Ra. And that's a musician that I am yet learning about, so it's new for me. And Ed Kawamura, one of my favorite people, you got to move up next to the microphone. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
So Edward Kawamura, famous man in this community for Kawamura Farms. Not giving you a shout out, but giving you a shout out. I like going there. It's where I get my chickens, where I get a lot of number of things. I appreciate so much what you do. Thank you, and welcome to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia Marshall and Jake with Kauai Soapbox. Edward Kawamura is joining us, and I work with Ed a little bit at the Veterans Center, and you work with the Veterans Center for 40 years, correct?
Yes, I do. You know, I'm an advocate for veterans because it's because of them that they sacrifice, whatever they sacrifice, that we have our freedom here. And, you know, I believe that they were promised things that the benefits are, and I want to make sure that our government takes care of them.
Mm. Yes. And the Veterans Center is really nice. It's a little different than the VA, though there's a VA at the Vet Center. The Vet Center is kind of right near the airport, across from where the Lihue Airport Post Office is. It's got the plane out front.
Yes, the Veterans Center is our home. You know, we wanted a home to come back to, and whenever we go away, we have veterans come back to there. We also have a museum there, you know, with a memorabilia of the what the veterans of Kauai have, and they wanted to make sure that we remember them at the museum there. So if you haven't been there to the museum, you ought to come and see. We have the Fighting 69 put in there because they were on the island right after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, mm-hmm. And so they were there, and they go back to the Civil War days. So that.
Yeah, they were on island for how long? Like close to a year, is that right?
Yeah, yes, they came there, and then from there they went down to the South Pacific there and did their fighting down the South Pacific.
So, I've seen old pictures where there was like rolled barbed wire on the beaches, and I've seen the gun turrets and stuff around the island. Like there's foxholes or concrete bunkers. What do you call that?
Yeah, they were all kind of concertina wire around. That's what they came to put up over here on the island. And there were places where, you know, it was like shelters and a military headquarters. And for the people that come to Kawamura Farm, Kawamura Farm started out, that building there, that Kawamura Farm was a Japanese school.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, it became a military headquarters. They stopped all the teachings of Japanese there, and that's why it became a military headquarters. And
wow.
Later, after the end of the war, it became the Wilcox Kindergarten.
Wow. And then when did you get it?
And my dad took it over sometime in the early 60s there. And so he started his business, M. Kawamura Farm, there back in 1962.
Wow. So I didn't know that. I thought you started it. So this, you're on the fourth generation, because I see your grandkids running around.
Yeah. The grandchildren are part of the fourth and fifth generation there.
Wow. Okay, I learned something new. I definitely see your children and your wife and then the grandkids. I didn't realize that there was a grandpa who had been there. So that's pretty wonderful. Now, this event that's coming up on November 11th, which is Veterans Day, also happens to be my son's birthday, so I always remember that one's a great day, kind of Armistice Day, Day of Peace, good day to be born. We're having a party. I am definitely coming. You want to tell us about that party?
Okay, thank you for the opportunity to come to KKCR and, talk about this here, because it is a thing that I look forward to, a big event, you know, and we're going to honor the Vietnam-era veterans. Vietnam-era veterans are veterans that served this country from 1955 to 1975. And one of the biggest things was the country was split during that time of the Vietnam War. And so many of them came back to the split in our community also. And so this year we're looking forward for the community to come in and say, okay, you know, we're together now and we want to support our veterans there.
I've been watching Although I should probably watch the edited version. I've been watching the raw version of Vietnam War, the Ken Burns special. There's 18 hours of it. It's gnarly for me just to watch. You know, I want to honor you for having been in the Vietnam War. I know that that had to have been incredibly difficult, if it's even just difficult to sit there and watch the story. And then it looks like at that time, like I was too young to really experience it when it was happening. But it was a very, very rough time for the people who went there. Most of them were drafted into it. And it seemed like there was a lot of confusion of even why that war started.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I kind of sympathize with the veterans, because veterans are always answering the call. You know, they were called upon during World War One, World War Two, and they answered the call. And our Vietnam veterans are also the same, that they answered the call, and you know, whatever America wanted, you know. And there's a saying, you know, that the veterans have, you know, all gave some gave all.
Right.
And so with that there, you know, we want to make sure that when we have this commemoration here on November the 11th at the Marriott, that we have, you know, the community participation. We now taking applications. We have applications, and we can get it to you if the people want there. And I can email you, and they can pick up copies from you there.
When you're saying you mean Felicia?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. All right.
I'm happy because Felicia has come to a couple of our meetings, you know, and trying to help us along on the North Shore here. And she's been most helpful, you know, getting me here and on this radio here, talk show. And I'm very pleased with, you know, the community coming in. And we're getting down to the wire now, so, you know.
So people can help. We can't mention any prices on any things, but the idea is that for people who served or who are even in the military at that time, not everybody who was in the military was actually boots on the ground in Vietnam, but in that whole window of time, their price for the ticket is very, very low. And it's like, who do we have playing that night?
That night, we will have, you know, Paul Togioka, the Slacky artist there. We'll have Henry Capono playing there, and Malani Bilyeu, of course, you know, the North Shore guy that does music there. And we also have a retired admiral who is going to be our guest speaker there. He used to be the commander-in-chief of the Pacific Fleet here, and so he's coming to speak there. So we're very honored to see that happening. And, you know, I have to give a mahalo to the Marriott, because the Marriott has bent over backwards to make this thing happen, you know. And
Marriott in Lihue.
The Kauai Marriott Resort there, and I have to thank them for that.
Yeah, so when we've been in, I think I've been in three meetings now, it's talking about this will be comradeship and warmth and friendship amongst people, and just a loving mahalo. You know, it's not a celebration of the war. It's a celebration of the family of people who went through something together.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you know, this is when we can fill that house, that ballroom there with people there that will make a feeling of warm home. I mean, the
welcome.
Gratitude. They'll see the show, the gratitude for the service of the Vietnam era veterans there. And I'd be most happy, because, you know, I'm working hard to try to get that room filled, and anybody that can come and invite their families, their friends. You know, I imagine they have a lot of veteran friends that want to come.
Well, I notice when I have been inviting veterans or bringing it up, I can see that the injury is still there, you know, and then it can seem kind of flippant for me in a happy voice to say, hey, you want to come to this dinner, you know, and they're like, you know, a little bit growling at me. And when I have watched some of that, I haven't finished the series yet, but just something that was really powerful to me is in the beginning when it's talking about that when people came back, they almost didn't ever talk about the war. They didn't talk about that they were, that they, what had happened in the beginning of it too. They had a piece where two couples who were friends for quite a long, for 12 years, didn't realize that the two men had both served close to the same time there because they never brought it up. And the women were talking, doing something somewhere else without them, and they realized that they had that shared experience. And I think that if you aren't able to process something as a group, it's incredibly difficult. And I think for the people coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan and all that too, it's really difficult when they come home and most of the people that are around aren't even thinking about that war.
Yes, so you know, unless you've been there and seen that, you know, people say they can imagine things, but it's really something that's inside of you, you know. And a lot of this post-traumatic stress syndrome is like a light switch, you know. They may go on years without that thing being there, and then all of a sudden somebody flick a switch and you know, they get impacted there. But, you know, by the people coming out to this commemoration, you know, it'll make a small closure in part of the books there, and I think that that's what we want to do anyway for the island of Kauai, you know.
And across the United States, there are going to be parties or celebrations, or I'm not quite sure what the word is to use. What are we using?
We're using commemoration.
Commemoration.
The state had their commemoration back in May, and you know, we felt that the Kauai Veterans Council felt that we need to do one on Kauai because, you know, many of the families couldn't attend the one on Oahu because of the cost of airfare, cost of hotel, and whatnot. And so we want to bring it to this island here and show that the people are together on this island here.
Yeah, and what we had at the Vet Center really recently was that Liberators, and that was about, we've talked about this a number of times, the 522nd, the Nisei soldiers, the Japanese-American soldiers who helped to liberate the people in the Dachau concentration camps, and that really made a big impression on me. And, you know, I learned so much just volunteering and teaching, and I understand how much I don't know and how fortunate I am to have come up in a generation where we haven't been drafted, right? The draft is kind of over then. In some ways, that might be hard because then people get disassociated from the wars.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as we look back during the World War One, World War Two, you know, somebody brought it up today to me, you know, about saying the Pledge of Allegiance when we were going to school, you know, in there. You said the Pledge of Allegiance, and, you know, you mentioned the word God, but, you know, it is what that flag stands for. It's all freedom, you know, freedom of what we can, freedom of speech and freedom of want. And many people paid the supreme sacrifice for that flag, you know, and proud to say that, you know, we have that flag, we should stand up and honor the flag of our country. You know, this is a great nation to be in. You know, I've been in other countries and whatnot where, you know, they don't have such freedom as we do. And so I'm happy to say that I've served our country.
And thank you for that. Mm-hmm. And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia Marshall and Jake with Kauai Soapbox. In the studio with me is Vet Center President Edward Kawamura, and then also who will be on in a little bit is Kelly Kelsey. So I know I'm somewhat of I've become a community activist, and one of the ways that I feel like I support our veterans and then certainly our soldiers who are on the ground, number one, I try and be informed. I know, like with Iraq, I went to the send-off of our National Guard and the return, and both, I was crying seeing who all went. I was so thankful everybody came back. We had nursing mother's leave. We had sets of parents. We had families that had like 7 people in it, and they had a very dangerous area. They protected from The Baghdad airport to Baghdad. That's a big, big assignment right there. And, you know, to see the courage, and most of the time when people join the National Guard, they're thinking they're going to go help a hurricane in another state or something like that. And I saw people that went out for that deployment who were also in Vietnam, which means they were grandfathers, right? Mm. So we sent the very young, the really mature, definitely some moms. I was kind of surprised at, you know, how much deployment we will do of mothers of young children. And I feel that it is all of our responsibility to always hold our fighting people up as high as we possibly can. And the other thing that I do try and do, Ed, is make sure they aren't exploited, right? Sometimes we exploit our armed forces, or they get exploited by interests that are beyond national defense. And so that's where, you know, social activism, you know, works together. But we have to make sure that we're not attacking each other, that we are like building each other up. I see that. Let's try to pull up the article that, and maybe you know, I tried to look before the show. I read an article. I actually saw two articles, pictures of ships deploying west, that were sending some big Navy ships towards Asia. Do you know about that?
Yeah, you know, it's always something, you know, when you hear about that there. But, you know, when you're standing there and you're there, that's a different feeling. And you know, people that get deployed, I think the community should get out and help the families of the, you know, because the guys are deployed. They look forward to, you know, when I went to Vietnam, you know, I had a thought of, oh, you know, only the veteran, the soldiers out there are of concern. But after I got back there and visualized that there, you know, you talk about, oh, the breadwinners out there, what happens if he don't come home to bring bread? You know, what happens to the family? And I think that many of us must be open to that there, and they help, you know, one another when you know that they're deployed, especially if you're neighbors and whatnot.
Yeah, and my sons right now are 19 and 22, so a number of their peers are in the service, and I pay attention to my former students and things that are in there, and I try and make sure and pull up their Facebook page and just let them know I'm paying attention and go down and, you know, look at it so that they don't feel, you know, forgotten at home. It's not like anybody right in my close sphere right now is on the ground in deep harm's way. But we have to be really conscious. I think also sometimes I see when people will speak really super harshly about the military, I cringe, because there are families of people who are in deployment, who are in there, that we have to make sure that we hold in love and respect and reverence, and with a mindset for keeping them safe. And our job is to keep our government accountable to the people, not to the corporations, you know. And what was another interesting thing in this past summer is all this amplification of the North Korean threat. And it is hard to watch how flippantly and I want to say immaturely, you know, taunts are being passed back and forth between national leaders, including our own. And so we should not be reckless. And it's a little bit like, oh, you know, I feel like I'm in the car with a drunk driver or something like that. You know, it's like, how do we you know, hold a responsible tone that keeps everyone safe, including ourselves? But then when we're worried about nuclear blasts coming over here, and then I did call the commander and the former commander of the base, you know, asking, hey, how likely are we to get hit by something with what all that they're trying to put out on the in the press? And they're like, well, we feel like we've got it pretty solid that can't happen. And, you know, they gave me a lot of encouragement of their capacity. And you know, there's that balance of, like, when you really do need protection. Maybe we need protection for both governments, especially if somebody's, you know, picking a fight on our own team. But it's important that we value what we do have.
I think the military is, strong enough, and we have some good leaders, you know, and whatnot. I have to put my faith in the leaders that we elect and whatnot there. Although, you know, sometimes we kind of doubt that, but I'm for one that believe that our country is strong enough to withstand anything.
Including kind of a reckless president. I think so, too.
Well, I hope and believe that our Constitution is strong enough to withstand anything, because that, I think, is the bedrock more so than any administration or particular law or policy or anything else. If we stick to the Constitution, we may be okay. And that's what the oath is sworn to in the military, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, you know, and like I said, you know, when I was growing up, you know, they always taught us on this island here, if you go to the mainland and you, one kawaii guy gets attacked by them, we went to basic training in Fort Ord, and one of our guys was coming back from the luau there, and so somebody jumped him, and the whole kawaii was ready to go out and battle for him, you know. And that's the comradeship that we have here in the islands here. And you know, that's one of the loving things about being a Kauaian, right, is that we look out after each other there.
So when you all have events, like I went to the Night at the Museum party recently. That was a lot of fun. That was a really good, it was like a MASH unit from the show, and it was like a living play, and we were all eating in the mess hall, and they had music and a lot of different things, and that was a fundraiser for the museum. It was very well done. Ed, like the Vet Center, they welcome people who don't even have any connections with the veterans, right? That's the whole point.
Well, you see, what we wanted to do was put us a place centrally located east and west, because you can go out of the center, you go to the right, you go one way, and you go to the other way. And one of the biggest things was when we went after the land, back in the 80s, early 80s there, was that we wanted to put that center there because we wanted a home. And so we went to AMFAC, and AMFAC agreed to that there, you know. And at one point they talked about, oh, maybe you should be in the back there. But my comment was the soldiers were never in the back. They would always like to be in the back seat or any place. But, you know, thanks to AMFAC, we got the land there. And it's there. And there's a number of plans, you know. We had, you just said, in June, we had the highway change from Kapuli Highway to Kauai Veterans Memorial Highway, which is good, you know. Because now when you say where you have to go, you just have to find the Veterans Highway there. And it's right close to the airport.
Yeah, and right just past the police and the court. You know, it's kind of right there in that whole little block. So, you have moved on. I mean, you'd care for that, but you're also really into ag, and you're really into health. You're constantly sending me things about eating cucumbers and different kinds of things that will help my health. And I know that you are a Buddhist monk. Is that correct?
No, I just got elevated to a Dharma teacher, you know, and I belong to the church called Shinyoen. Shinyoen they have a temple on Oahu there. And this Shinyoen is about finding joy for everyone, right? You know, it's through doing things for others that you get virtue, and you also see they're happy and you become happy. And so, you know, we have meetings, twice a month that we encourage people to come, because it is about teaching them gratitude and, awareness of how to walk the path there.
Wonderful. We have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, Felicia. I was just listening while driving.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a veteran, but I was thinking the other day where, you know, our knucklehead president said that, you know, these other past presidents didn't call those people who passed away in service of their country.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering to myself, you know, for a guy that says something right off the cuff like that, it gets kind of, well, I kind of chagrined because it's no respect, and the guy's never been in the military. Maybe that's what he needed when he was growing up. He needed to have some kind of value, some kind of grounding, you know, but to say stuff like that, that these past presidents didn't do what they're supposed to do and honor the dead, that is terrible.
And thank you for bringing this up, because I have to hold myself accountable for not remembering we did lose 4 Special Forces people this week.
Yeah.
And yes. And you, was that in, that was in Somalia, correct?
Yeah, Niger.
Yeah. Niger, right there, okay. Yeah, that I don't have television, so I don't see stuff as much, but that was a very tough bombing and activities going on. So thank you so much.
Yeah, and good on you and you guys for your program. You know, as a veteran, when I came home from Vietnam, I got involved with Herb Connie with the canoe.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And so basically, I think if I didn't get to go to school and get involved with the Hokulea stuff, you know, it's sort of like the canoe found us. And now I've built this other canoe for Kauai, the Namahoy.
Yes.
All those years ago. And I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, at least something out of my last 40 years, something's come good.
Well, you have done amazing things, and you are a community hero. I believe I know who I'm speaking with. And so I thank you for all that you've done, and you have made a difference for a whole generation of people, a different type of warrior, a Kia'i warrior, rising up and growing up and holding their own presence in a very strong way. So I appreciate that. And are you likely to be at the vet event on, it's a good deal on, pitching, on November 11th, because I'm looking forward to going, and it's I think, you know, it's designed to really be encouraging one another, and you are well respected.
And what is on November 11th? Because on November October 29th, and on on the Big Island, Imiloa, they're having all the crew members of the past voyages, they have an open house at Imiloa as part of the University of Hawaii and part of the observatory up there at the Keck telescope up
right,
in
right. So they're blending the Hokulea and the observatories. That's an interesting blend.
Well, they're trying to, you know, you got one foot on living in the past and the other foot in trying to bridge that and trying to instill in young people that, you know, you can make a difference. You know, one person can make a difference.
Yeah. I was so moved at the homecoming of the Hokulea. So this event is on Veterans Day. It's November 11th at
The Vet Center.
No, at the Marriott.
The Marriott. The Marriott Hotel.
At 5 p.m. Also,
put your mouth next to the mic.
I got you on the phone there, I'd like to invite you to our Veterans Day Parade on November the 4th. It's going to be in Lihue there.
Oh.
And assembly time is at 8:30, so we look for, you know, the public to come out and the week before the big event. And honor the veterans there at our Veterans Day Parade.
Oh, good one. It's a good one, sir.
Yeah. Well, great.
Sounds like the thing to be there.
Yeah.
I'll let you guys go and still have your talk. I'm listening.
Okay.
I'm on my way home.
Thank you so much.
Aloha.
All right. Aloha. Bye. And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia, Marshall, and Jake with Kauai Soapbox. We have Ed Kawamura from the Vet Center in the studio with us, and Kawamura Farms, big element in our community.
I want to take time to thank Felicia and the people at KKCR for this opportunity to come out and share our Manao about veterans, you know, and please look and come and support our event there. Try your best, and we'll see you there. Thank you, and always come and visit us at the center. It's our veterans' home, and we open it up to the public, you know, to have their birthday parties, events, and whatnot there. So thank you very much.
Yes. Yes, you're welcome. I mean, I'm so pleased. I've been to many events there, weddings, wedding dinners, graduation parties. It's actually a big hall that's really good for a lot of things. And I have gotten to learn from the events that you have there, like the women's vets, really good education on what is available for that. And kind of shifting a little bit in the dialogue, I just want to bring up going to the county council last Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
It was so worth it. Actually, I was there Wednesday and Thursday. Thursday was all on the general plan update. But the morning on Wednesday was about houselessness or homelessness. And what I could see pretty strongly was that the council all cared. And what I've got a lot of ideas, and I've been focused on this issue. But it's happening, you know, all over the world, really, and really strongly in the United States. But we have a big problem here. And one of the things that came up that was pretty rough is there had been an administrative rule put in place that the council didn't even know. There apparently had been a public hearing, but not much outreach, so not many people came to that public hearing. But that is that they can close the campgrounds and the parks at will.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fashioned after what is on Oahu. It's not exactly a sleep lie ban, but they've done all this administrative rules to keep people off public places because there is so much houselessness. And my own personal observation is there are many vets who are houseless. I think the Veterans Administration is trying to work on that, but sometimes people with PTSD or alcohol problems or different things like that have a very strong trauma in their life. And so vets and others, there's certainly plenty of people who might otherwise not have trauma in their life other than not enough money to swim the financial current.
So what good ideas were floated in terms of houselessness?
Well, big, huge pause, right?
Right.
Because...
lay it on us.
Well, I have some ideas, but I'm trying to push my ideas. It's a big problem. Like, one thing that Mel Raposo was really throwing out there is he wanted to have safe zones.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there can be a lot of back and forth chatter on what is a safe zone. Like, I think a simple example that was in his mind is someplace like Vindinha Stadium. You know, here's this big stadium and parking lot. Why can't people just sleep in the parking lot right there if they want to and leave the bathrooms and the showers open and available for people? And, like, that's an example of what could be a safe zone that shouldn't cost too much money and, you know, to be able to create something like that, because what was brought up, and clearly him and some of the other council members have been told by their friends, you know, they're asleep in the tent with their children who have to go to school the next day, and there's a big banging on the tent wall or the windows of the car saying, hey, you know, get up, you have to move on, and, you know, people have to move on, and all they're doing is sleeping. They're not causing any problems. And it definitely, as pieces were brought up, like parks and different things of like how they're going to get rid of the problem, but sometimes getting rid of the problem simply means getting rid of a place, a safe place for the homeless or houseless to be. It's not getting rid of the problem, it's just shoving it down the road, and it ultimately, where are they going to be able to do that? You know, like one thing that was shown, $12 million last year was set aside to be helping agencies. It has to go to nonprofits rather than directly to the government to help houselessness in the across the islands. And Kauai only got $77,000 of that $12 million. And so,
when is that based on population? That might make sense. Right?
No, what it's based on is that we don't have very many nonprofit organizations or NGOs that have the capacity or the people to sit there and write up these grants and administer the grants. Because like on Oahu, maybe you have a large church because there's a million people there. And, you know, Catholic Charities or somebody like that is able to sit there and write up the grants and administer it in strength. Whereas here we have small little groups of people who are probably just mostly struggling themselves, and it's just enough to try and keep a shopping center location to have a church service, mm-hmm. and they don't have the capacity to sit there and run a housing shelter. Mm-hmm. So we just don't have that big capacity in there. And, you know, there's definitely the Kahea is out to see how many people we can get to come forward or organizations. Like they had this landlord summit, and 58 landlords attended, but only 8 units were committed after it, you know. So it was great that they had the summit. They also had 27 property management companies and realtors come, but it didn't turn into so far much housing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they're trying to figure it out. What I'm pushing on that I've been looking at and trying to get some of our talented people who are part-time residents to get involved in is considering the micro units. Like when we look at all this unutilized commercial space that's everywhere, there's so many empty spaces, it's storefronts and warehouses and these buildings that exist. Maybe we can put 300 square foot little units or 350 square foot units in there, and even partly just market rate. You know, you rent those out for $600 or $700. It's something that people can somewhat afford, and at least there's a place. And I think with public-private partnerships, it can be a way to help.
Yeah, and if you make them nice and give them soundproof walls, they don't have to be big. You know,
they don't have to be big. Yeah. It's an initial investment to be laid out. I want to thank Ed Kawamura for coming. Aloha.
Aloha, and again, thank you for the opportunity to be on your talk show here. It's very good, you know, that people get to hear about that. And on the way of homeless, you know, we all looking out. If you know of any homeless veteran that qualified to come to our commemoration, please call me at 652-6706. We will try our best to get them to attend this event there.
Yeah, and to be loved up. Yeah, you are worthy. Thank you so much for coming, Ed. And Ed's business is actually right next to the one homeless shelter that we have in the islands. And does that work out okay for you? You're right next to Kauai Economic Opportunity?
My only thing is that I'd like to see one for the veterans. And I think that I've heard that there's something in the plan. It's just not open yet to the public yet, but, you know, they're planning for something there. And then we can take care of homeless veterans there.
So thank you. Okay, have a good drive back. I know you have another meeting. I think micro units would, one, be a very good thing. What I've been talking about on the radio a little bit and certainly talked about in front of the council is when we look at the high incarceration rates, it's just incredible how many people are in there for nonviolent crimes. And at least the way it was categorized, looks like 4 inmates in KCCC, Kauai Community Correctional Center, are in there for pretty violent crimes. And so it seems like if we can help our nonviolent people instead of housing them for $60,000 or more a year, that we could, you know, find a way to do it for a whole lot less. And a lot of times, like when they have programs like what's called Housing First, a whole lot of the rest of the social problems go away when somebody has stability. When you're sleeping out in the cold and you're hungry and you have, you're constantly being harassed to move on from one place to another, you're a lot more likely to be agitated or need to self-medicate or, you know, have different challenges. Aloha, you're on the air. Are you going to need to turn your radio off, please? Can you turn your radio? Yes.
Hey, Felicia. You know, I keep thinking sometimes when you were mentioning about the open businesses or open lots,
the vacant buildings. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, if you're a business owner next door, you probably don't want to have that.
If you
a bunch of neighbors next to you, you know, I'm not trying to say you have some great people, and then you have some people that just don't really care, like that Kaka'ako.
So let's talk about that, because
you're
bringing up
tapped into things.
You're bringing up a really good point. And so, like, sometimes there are people who have serious challenges, and that's why they're houseless.
No, exactly. And so,
and some
my
people
point
don't.
Was,
uh-huh.
you know, maybe make it more of, instead of being of a warehouse or something next door to an existing business in a core, you know, make it a little bit outside in the fringe, like how it is by Carmara Enterprises, you know, in the KEO area. You know, make it more of like a drive-in, you know, at night. You come in and you either can park your vehicle there and you have a power source, you have a one core area of bathrooms, showers, you know, and then you have to kind of, it's almost like a motorhome kind of place, but it's like you have to check out the next morning, you kind of do your thing. They can clean up, and it becomes an area maintainable.
And
you know,
I think that works and is appropriate for people who maybe have some very serious challenges, but a lot of people are houseless simply because there's nowhere to go. They might have
a
child, they might have
like
a dog.
You know, kind of a grant program of making another, like of a, you know, like a nutshell place where they have a solid tent or a solid structure that they have, and in the morning they, you know, can kind of move on or something and then come back if they need to and have a little more of a fluid situation instead of,
having
it be such an anchor.
Well, what works in a lot of places is exactly what you're not saying. What works in a lot of places is when they make little apartments. Like in the past, like 50 years ago, 70 years ago, they used to have boarding houses. And they had... Go ahead.
Exactly. And they brought people into their homes.
No.
But these were a little more...
No.
Oh, okay.
They used to have, it was pretty normal to have locations that were meant for single people, that they just have a little unit, and they're like little...
Like a YMCA.
No. Like, well, they could be like a YMCA, but there
I mean,
was...
I know exactly it was a YMCA. I mean...
There were YMCA. There were YMCAs, but there was also, you know, if somebody rents a little place, instead of being roommates with several other people could rent a little place, and they go to work, and they go to school, and they have their regular life and their regular job. It's just cheaper, and it's small, and instead of having, you know, it's not like these people have, quote, a problem. They just, there's no places for people right now. So many people are in their cars simply because there's no place to rent.
Yeah, and again, for that framework, you are applying it more towards the Hawaii model than the mainland model, where you can go to any patch of desert or, you know, out, you know, farm corner or something, and it's so much cheaper per square foot or per square acre or whatever you have it than it is here, and no one wants to be putting forth the money of what it costs. You could put them in an apartment building instead of housing homeless people here.
Well, can you hold for one moment? It's 5 o'clock, so I need to say you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, Kauai Soapbox with Felicia, Marshall, and Jake. Well, actually, a lot of these models that I'm looking at are in places like Los Angeles, Minneapolis, Boston. They're in urban centers, and these, you know, some of these places are pretty darn swank. You know, like they got a 300 square foot room, and it rents for $1,900 a month. You know, it's actually a trend line that landlords are liking because it's higher per square footage of what ends up being rentable. So in these ranges,
I mean, I hear $1,900 a month here.
Yeah. Well, we wouldn't want that here. We're not trying to get that, but I mean, it can range all the way over the place.
I'm trying to compare apples to apples.
Yeah. So what happens in these cities? Like one that I made a handful of posts, and one organization is called skidrow.org, I think. That where they are doing infill for the people who are struggling. But then there are also stuff that's just simply really directed at the millennial crowd, the 20-somethings, that they just simply can't afford a place. But they are completely healthy, and they are needed in the workforce.
Yeah, and they're completely with their iPhone or whatever. There's a different... Okay, I had to probably see a different cross-section of that model or, like, that person or that... I'm thinking more of the people who have a family, like when you were saying about people knocking on their... the reason why, I guess, I called was when you said people knocking on their...
Camp or their door or something.
And they can't... Their kids have to go to school, you know, so...
Yeah, they can't drive to Lihue.
Or a poor or a veteran, you know, these people have some place to go for a day or a night to hunker down, do their thing, clean up, at least move around the community and then come back.
Right. Completely traumatized, you know, as an 8-year-old. Completely traumatized and shamed.
Exactly. You know, and
it's not a solution for that 8-year-old.
Movie, I think there's a movie coming out with the people living in the Disneyland shadow right now. I forget the name of it, but it's coming out. It's they're like living in apartments and they have no place to go, but you can see Disneyland right there across the street, you know, and it's kind of messed up that profile of America in that shadow of Disneyland, you know. But the back to, you know, the boarding houses and everything else, there were a little more, I would think, or from what I've heard, more structure. You know, I laugh. You ever saw the original movie of,
I don't know.
Alien Invasion the Earth stood still. You know, I'm sorry,
okay.
I couldn't get my thoughts out there.
No worries.
But he goes to a boarding house and gets a cross section of Americana. You know, and you don't see that ever here again.
Well, it used to be we had places for even they had something called the Poor Farm, which. I don't know is necessarily something that we want to recreate, but we don't even have that now. So,
right.
So thank you for calling in. And I'm hearing, if I'm getting you correctly, the idea of infill with micro units makes you nervous because it might bring an element of people into the commercial sector that is not comfortable
well,
for you.
You know, at least I'm looking at it from a business point of view. Also, it's just like if you, maybe people don't move or do, or flow through the community, you know, and you have people hanging out there, it's probably going to be a bite to the business person, whoever has to do. Yeah, I'm not trying to be.
It's a good issue to explore, and what
I look forward to seeing is more of like a drive-in.
Well, here's the thing, and on another show we can go deeper on it, because I have to do my top of the hour stuff that I've been holding off here. Is for many businesses, it's actually great, because what it does is it brings a concentration of customers that are right in that area. Like they can select that it is, it's their patrons, it's their employees that end up being able to live right in the building areas. So people end up being happy. They don't show up late for work. They're able to manage on the cost. Like the shopping center or the commercial area typically can, you know, somewhat choose who goes into those tenant spaces, and it creates a push and a vibe and business. It's good for business. And very commonly, it's the second story of a shopping center that are getting those micro units.
I think this is more of like, I don't know if you want to call it, you know, that could be a great Princeville model, but living in La Jolla in the big city, so to speak, you know, and I joke around about that all the time. We see a lot of stuff. Like I forget to go buy hat, you know, like milk or something in the morning, so I run over to Walmart. And there's a big community coming out of the, you know, a homeless community,
right?
You know, and I'm not trying to put them down.
And they got all moved away, you know. They got run off.
I've had a bag, you know, they're looking through the trash, you know, looking for high five stuff, you know, and I just. And going to McDonald's, because the McDonald's is the most affordable place to eat, you know, for them.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems it's painful to watch, and it could creep some people out. I'm not trying to be, you know, it just, I've offered people food sometimes, and they've turned on me, like, why don't you give me money too? You know, and I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, like,
So thank you for sharing. I need to honor my underwriters.
I'm not trying to make it a very caustic situation. Felicia, you bring up stuff.
It's a difficult topic.
I'm trying to create a dialogue here.
Yeah, no, I appreciate
what you're
it.
What you're trying to say.
Yeah, I hear you, and I appreciate it. And thank you for calling in, because I have to honor my underwriters. Okay, thank you so much.
Have a great afternoon.
Okay, and stay listening. Aloha. Okay, Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
The Agency on Elderly Affairs in Kauai's ADRC, Aging and Disability Resource Center, is announcing Medicare open enrollment beginning October 15th through December 7th. Please be aware of scammers who may call you offering bogus services to get your Medicare information. If you're not sure the call is legitimate, hang up. Never respond to open solicitations for Medicare-covered supplies or services, and only provide your Medicare number to healthcare providers or facilities when you're actively seeking service. If you need assistance on selecting a Medicare plan or have any questions about Medicare, please contact the County's Agency on Elderly Affairs at 241-4470 or visit their office, 444 Rice Street, Suite 330. They're open Monday through Friday from 7:45 to 4:30.
Edible Hawaiian Islands is a subscription-based, advertiser-supported print and digital magazine, the only James Beard Award-winning food and drink magazine in the state of Hawaii. Edible Hawaiian Islands digital magazine may be enjoyed at ediblehi.com.
And mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio. We appreciate your support. Marshall, there was a few callers. Does somebody have a message?
Yeah, there sure were, Felicia. I've got three comments to pass on. A couple are on the housing. One is that the caller said that guest houses are allowed on ag open land, but that one cannot rent their guest house, even though there are... you can rent a tiny home that's less than 500 square feet with a kitchen. I think I got that straight. Does that jive with your understanding?
Well, I mean, you're not allowed to rent out your guest house. Like, you might have a guest house on your property, but you can't rent it. There is legislation before the council about an additional rental unit. That's something that is a big goal. And so when people said, well, were there any suggestions? I mean, that's something that they're trying to work on, and that would be if somebody has under 6,000 square feet, they could have a 400-square-foot unit. If they have more than 6,000 square feet, they could have up to 800-square-foot rental unit on their property. Obviously, no Airbnb. They are acknowledging that in many neighborhoods that is basically just going to be legitimizing what's already there. People very often have a grown adult child or something like that in their family and, you know, lock off basically the garage unit, something's redone. But trying to look at that, they just have to look at infrastructure issues. I would say that they are legitimately really trying to struggle and look at what can work, and building costs are so expensive. So something close on that. All right, the next one, you had three comments.
Sure, a caller suggested something like a private background, you know, like a KOA that, what did I say?
Campground.
Yeah.
You said background, but we knew what you meant.
Yeah. And I think,
private backgrounds, right? So he said that, you know, if it had clean bathrooms and maybe even somebody, you know, staying there could be hired to clean, take care of it, keep things in order. So something simple like
that's not an easy thing to do. It's right. Like, you know, property is multi-millions of dollars to do that. People have certainly, there are you know, renegade operations like that where people are renting. I mean, you can even see ads on Craigslist for $600 to stay in a tent on somebody's piece of property, $600 a month. We have regulation against motorized homes. There's a lot of effort to sort of not what people might consider trash up the place, though it's interesting when you see a movie set come on, well, there's a whole, like, 27, you know, a flotilla of 27, you know, trailer homes for a while they're filming the movie. But there's a lot of limitations on that. It disrupts property values, which disrupts tax rates, and people complain. And so there's a lot of laws against that. So a KOA probably wouldn't work so easily. That's Campgrounds of America. People have membership to KOA campgrounds, and they drive across the country, and they have a wonderful life, actually, just cruising in their vehicles. And I know people who do that, and it's really great for them. But here, you're not going to be driving very far. It's only 35 miles across.
You know what I'm thinking is maybe there could be sort of a three-track approach to the houselessness right now. One that's sort of to address the crisis, the immediate crisis, and some emergency measure like allowing people to park overnight in Vinton Stadium parking lot.
That's a safe zone, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. There could be intermediate measures that maybe take a little longer, maybe do some commercial infill. You know, I'm thinking something even like, you know, it's like standard practice to put up refugee camps where people have no place to live. If we can do that in, you know, other places around the world, they have some pretty sweet, you know, refugee-type construction to go on at lower price.
I think the biggest challenge is that people might think, wow, I mean, and they do think this, I could be homeless in Minneapolis or I could be homeless in Kauai. And so, I mean, that's the big concern is that if we create something like a refugee city, we'll all of a sudden have a whole bunch of refugees.
Right. So we have to deal with that problem.
And,
I mean, that's just about with everything. Even with all of the housing that we provide, that's an issue, right? Who actually gets to live there? But we could then also, in parallel with these immediate and intermediary steps, look at long-term solutions, including somehow addressing that trajectory. And Jake, what was word?
Recently, I just saw something on social media. I believe it was in Texas.
Which mic are you on? Here, take mic one.
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. So recently on social media, I saw something. I could be wrong. I believe it was in Texas. But what they were doing is, now, of course, you had to qualify for these homes, but they were tiny homes on insanely small lots. But they were kind of rent to own. So you would qualify, you'd have to have a job and meet these prerequisites, and these homes were no more than even 300 square feet. They were very inexpensive to build, and these people would then own them. I'm not sure about how they zoned it and things like that, but I think it would be a low-cost way to deal with part of the issue, and at least then some people are looking forward to it. You know, they're back actually buying something, you know, investing, you know, something to be proud about.
Those, I've seen a number of programs like that. They have them in Oregon, and they do tend to work well. What the caller who was on, who was saying, you know, land isn't cheap here, so it's not as easy to do it. Like in Texas, Texas is a big place.
Yeah.
Arizona is a big place. And so the KOAs, you know, you can get cheap land. But that is a good way. And I don't know if people would really want to be buying into these little micro units, but I see the micro units as a step up, you know. And I know people as they're getting, you know, moving forward, we have essentially those anyway. They're just all illegal, right? You know, there are little micro units all over the place. Okay, and we're going to take a call, and then we're going to actually really bring you, Kelly, into the conversation pretty strongly. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hey, aloha. I just wanted to say, like, it's great to think about, like, some place for, like, homeless and all that stuff. I think part of the problem here is that the turn and burn real estate.
Sure.
There's people that are making a ton of dough, millions upon millions of dollars. They don't even live here.
Yeah.
They're just investing and turning and burning properties. Find something for $10 million, do a little reno and sell it for $15 million. And they don't even do anything other than pay a little tax and a little bit of a thing why they're here. So, you know, I don't know how the county government could address that or the state government could address that, but I know the guys that are sitting on the county council really don't care about that, and they kind of...
We accidentally hung up on someone. Can you pick him back up?
I'm going to try.
Okay, let's see if he's still there. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
I'm just voicing that, like, something's got to be done about that.
Okay,
the turn and burn thing where people are making millions, don't even really do anything for the community.
So I want to speak
here
to that.
They don't live here. They don't plug in. They're not part of it. And they're just stripping money away and then making it very difficult for hardworking people to get a reasonable piece of land and a house here.
So I want to speak to that. One, a way to diminish that capacity is to put what's called a conveyance tax. That would be a legal way to do it. It would typically probably be levied by the state, but it could be that if you buy a piece of property and you sell it within, say, 3 years, that you pay a conveyance tax that's like a capital gains tax. So if you pay it, take a really big hit, that it becomes not worth doing it if you spin it too fast. Sometimes people buy property and they simply are famous and that famous person sells the property, and then the property is worth $2 or $3 or $4 or $5 million more because Kelly Kelsey had once lived in it. That's my guest in the store, the studio. But yes, you're right, and that's the challenge of being in the open market. And when you talk to people who work in the real estate industry, oftentimes instead of even using the word buyer or new homeowner, they just naturally use the word investor because they're used to selling to people who will never live here. Or, you know, they're buying and flipping it. So you're absolutely right. I appreciate what you're bringing up. It's a challenge, and that's one of the challenges that's part of being in the United States because you can't close the door on that market, but we're also having foreign markets. And when we're talking about certain freedoms, it's a freedom to be able to sell your land for what it's worth, and the buyer sort of sets what that price is. So we are swimming in a global economy with typically service jobs. So thank you for calling. I have other people lined up behind
you. No worries. And if we do that, let's make the tax really big, a really huge tax.
Yeah, that would be a way to discourage things. Thank you for calling.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Thank you.
Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hey, sorry, it's Butch again.
Hi.
Hey. So I'm not sure. I missed the beginning of the program. Is the point of the program having affordable housing for low-income people?
We were talking about veterans. That's what the beginning of the program was about. And what we were just going into was looking at what the county council, the discussion that came up on last Wednesday in the morning, the housing department came in and was talking about houselessness. And they had done a study, and they had done an event with trying to bring in landowners and realtors and just to help them understand the problem, property managers, and trying to encourage people to get HUD. So we were looking at that. We were looking at safe zones that came up, and we were also looking at the fact that it became evident that a administrative rule had gone into effect without even the council knowing about it, that parks could be closed at the whim of the Parks Department. And if they decided problems were happening in a park at night, they could say, okay, there's no more camping at night, and just close the park down so they could flush out all the houseless people. So there is a real challenge. A lot of our houseless are people who have generational history here, if not, you know, be pre-contact Hawaiian people. And so it's a very complex problem. So we were discussing the complexity of the problem.
There's probably like a multi, if you bear with me for a second.
Okay, and I'm just going to give you a couple minutes because I've got Kelly coming on.
Housing for the people who can't afford property. They call it affordable housing, but
it's not affordable.
$100,000.
$400,000 for a duplex,
exactly. Yeah, I'm sorry. I was trying to, right, $400,000 even is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then trying to make it, so I'm not sure, like the either by grant programs or by loan programs, those aren't, I don't see those happening.
Well, here's the challenge, and then we're going to move on.
I'm sorry, just and real quick, the land values for Kauai don't fit those programs.
That's correct.
I don't know how to say
that. Okay, so here's the thing. There's state land. There's state land that could possibly be there.
It's almost like the same with the roads. It's like there's state roads and there's county roads.
There's very little county land.
You know, whoever gets a better grant, you know, it we're waiting for a subsidy from the federal government because we can't afford to take care of those by ourselves.
Butch, wrap your mind around this. Wrap your mind around this.
Okay.
The cost on making that duplex is more than the $400,000 that they're selling it for. The subsidy brings the price down. It costs that much to put in the water and the power and the road and the...
No, exactly.
It does, so they can't make it cheap.
I totally understand this. That's why when they even say $400,000, it's still outside the range of
people who live here for 50, 60, 80, 100 years. I just...
Yep. So thank you for that.
I don't know how to say it's affordable because these people are getting forced out of their homes because of either property taxes and people buying up big chunks of land, and they can't afford to live.
Right, and we're criminalizing
in the means of their job.
Butch. Yes. We're going to move on. But we're criminalizing people for being poor. We are literally putting them in jail. We are literally treating them like trash. We don't want them eating out of the dumpsters next to Walmart.
Exactly.
We are looking down on these people, and some of them have just gotten cancer. Or, you know, if you stop and you actually learn the stories of the people who are houseless,
a great many of
them have real challenges.
I am, but they're my neighbors, and I'm kind of like,
yeah.
God, Joe, you know, like,
okay.
How are you doing today? He goes, well, I'm doing better today, you know, thank God, because I did, you know.
Bruce, we're going to move on, but we have a high suicide rate, we have a high depression rate, and we have a high rate of alcoholism and addiction, and they are related to being treated like trash and having no place to go. So,
well, and exactly, and we
can't look down on this.
Community has this issue. I'm so, Felicia, real quick, but the ratio for our suicide rates and depression and drug addiction probably rank higher to the cost of a place to live.
We have a profound rate.
The one thing that kind of just struck me, kind of, I'm trying to rail you.
I have to go.
I applaud you for bringing this up, but it was the point of, you know, when you were bringing property values down based on, you know, the person, it's the property values to what we can get for our houses or businesses or, you know, commercial properties, you know, versus what we could be giving out. We don't have these large tracts of land.
That's
we
correct.
We are kind of a Puerto Rico.
Butch,
know?
Thank
we
you.
Are,
thank
are.
You. Thank you very okay. much. Okay.
Thanks,
Aloha. I always, every morning, I am so thankful that I have a house to lay my head down in. I think, but for the grace of God go I, when I see people who are displaced, you know, I'm just thankful what their hardship is I haven't shared. Okay, Marshall?
Felicia, a caller wanted to express that he felt that the county council could do more in paying attention to issues affecting Native Hawaiians. He said that they effectively kicked that ball off to the state and that they could take more responsibility for that. I hope I relayed that well enough.
I agree.
Okay.
I mean, I think, I think that is a persistent and profound problem. And I think anybody who listens to this show knows that I have really taken a pretty deep look at the historic trauma that community has and how the dominant culture is out of alignment with the indigenous culture. And for some people of Hawaiian ancestry, they are completely comfortable operating in the dominant culture, and they want to. But there are plenty of others who don't want to. And I think we are also a magnet for people who want to live close to the land, at least in the more rural areas of the islands. And so people come here and they have a heart frame and a spirit that really wants to live in a Malama Aina way. So, yes, we have people with an indigenous background for it, and we have people who are drawn here from that.
Felicia, I just have a quick contribution from a caller, actually from the beginning of the show.
Okay.
It was back to the stranded whales at Kalapaki Bay. And he just wondered if anybody had any kind of insight as to why Kalapaki Bay and nowhere else. It makes sense how that happens in one place and not another.
I don't know. I tried to call Don Heacock, actually. I tried to call a handful of people who might know some of those pieces. I know last time it was Hanalei Bay. I mean, it's not hard to imagine why they come into a bay.
Right.
Because the water is deeper. I mean, it happens on other beaches. It's just people aren't hanging out there, right? I mean, every once in a while, there's a stranded dead whale on a different beach. But, like, a whole crowd of them comes in. It's going to happen where they can swim in, right? Whales die all the time out in the ocean, and we don't know. Like, just because these guys came in and beached themselves, there might be... Let's just pretend for a moment that their sonar system was broken from some big sound.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably a whole bunch of them that just land in the bottom of the ocean, and we just don't know about it, right? So... We only know about those who strand themselves on the beach in front of us,
yeah.
Right? We don't know who drowns on the bottom.
No, we don't know. But maybe they didn't. I mean, that's total speculation, right, that there may be more whales that died and dropped to the bottom of the ocean.
Well, I'm sure on a regular basis whales die and drop to the bottom of the ocean.
Well, sure, naturally.
Yeah.
But as a result of some...
Yeah, we don't know.
Right.
We don't know.
I'm sure whatever traumatic thing they suffered, when they're in that situation, they're going to go to the closest bay they can find. And it just so happened to be Nui Willy this time. It could have been Hanalei. It could be any other bay on the island. It's just,
yeah.
You know, whenever they're in that situation, it's, you know, it's obviously pretty dire.
Right. So it probably didn't happen off the coast of the west side.
Like, yes.
It wouldn't happen on the west side. And they go, okay, I got an idea. Let's go. All the way around to Kalapaki.
And the bay is more protected, so if there are harmful vibrations out in the deeper waters, it's more protective in the bays, so they're drawn to seek refuge.
Yes. So you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Kauai Soapbox. We're going to hear about a board meeting that we have coming up. If you want to really help to influence how KKCR runs, this is something of interest for you. And when we come back on, we're going to be talking to Kelly Kelsey.
The Board of Directors of the Kekahu Foundation, the license holder for KKCR, Kauai Community Radio, will hold its quarterly business meeting on Monday, October 23rd at 6 p.m. at the Kapa'a Neighborhood Center. All interested parties are welcome to attend. For more information, please call 826-7774.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Kelly. Kelsey.
Sorry, it happens all the time. Double Kel.
Tell us about the Wisdom Weavers of the World.
Well, before we jump to that, I just want to bridge because I'm of Cherokee ancestry, and my ancestors were walked off their homeland, and much of my life has been understanding what it is it means to be human and to be a part of something, and I see that's at the core of all these things. So the vets, for the houselessness, and I studied with a Cherokee woman who had created something in Vermont called a peace village, and it's a place on land where anyone's welcome, someone who's committed a crime, single mother. And it's a model of helping people belong back to the land and belong to each other. And I see that as the core of all these issues, is we need places of belonging.
Right.
Where people can put their personal energy and feel valued again. Because it's about, we have distorted values. We have land values that are inflated, and we have people values that are deflated. And so how do we bring back that into balance? And that is what this
right.
Wisdom Weavers Gathering is all about, which I'm excited to talk about here.
So I like how you're weaving those two topics together, and very much that is how. And I know, Jake, you have some Native American background too. Your mom was the person, the main person for the Powwow Council for a number of years.
Yes, my mom originally started the Powwow and helped organize that, and I have a lot of Native American blood as well. But I was born and raised here, so I kind of tend to not
identify with that.
Yeah, identify with that as much as others would.
And so tell us what the Wisdom Weavers are.
Okay, so the Wisdom Weavers of the World it's a vision that an elder from Alaska, Alarion Merkuliev, who's been in the show here
mm-hmm.
with
he's
you before.
Really, really good speaker.
Yeah, and he's a visionary... helping to bridge ancient wisdom into modern times. And so this vision is to have a gathering here on Kauai with the blessings of Hawaiian elders that he's requested this opportunity to come the week of November 2nd through the 4th. We'll have some offerings for the public, but mostly it's going to be a private council of indigenous elders from all over the world. We have the Kogi people from Colombia, Earth wisdom keepers that withstood, their people withstood the conquistadors, and they kept their indigenous spiritual tradition intact to this day, and they're now traveling the world to share that, to help guide our hearts and our spirits back into unity consciousness. Then we have Mona Palaka, one of the 13 indigenous grandmothers, coming. She's Havasupai Hopi from Arizona. And we've got some Aboriginal elders from the oldest rainforest in northern Australia. And we have elders from Canada, obviously Alaska, here in Hawaii. And who else am I forgetting? Oh, and from South Africa, we have a woman, Bush woman, who's a traditional healer, is coming. And it's just a remarkable opportunity to see how do we bring different perspectives and different storylines to strengthen our human connection and honor that every culture has these commonalities of what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be a steward of the land and to be in harmony with each other and with all the elements of creation? And I feel like that's really what is at the heart of so many modern issues, is we've taken that deep relationship and that deep sense of belonging out of the picture because we've put value on the dollar and not on the spirit and each person's personal gifts. And I believe every person has amazing gifts to offer, and when we have the space to let them shine, we all benefit.
That's right. And when we only allow the gift that is about acquisition of money, which often happens as a result of exploiting something, mm-hmm. we really get an out-of-balance society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is an amazing gift that these elders are coming to Kauai, and the magic of this gathering, too, is we have a film crew that is coming, Academy Award-winning film crew that are going to be interviewing the elders and recording messages that will go up on 20-plus websites around the world in over 10 different languages. So these messages from all these different cultures will be woven together for people to hear that they just may have never had contact with this kind of wisdom. And so we will be having some open public ceremonies. I just put an ad on Heartbeat of Kauai today to get information to people. We're still determining exactly the locations, but we'll be doing sunrise ceremonies November 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. And people will be welcome to come at 6 a.m. at those locations once we get that information up at Heartbeat of Kauai. So look for the Wisdom Weavers ad that I put up. But then mostly the elders will be in private council weaving their cultural basket of remembering who we are. And because often, unfortunately, these indigenous elders also, they're kind of the token speaker at some of these conferences, and they don't really get the traditional honored space of allowing the spirit to move through them to share what's needed. And so this is a really special container that Ilarion has envisioned to truly honor the quiet voices that often are drowned out.
Can you bring him into the show?
Yeah, I would love to bring him. He'll be back on island October 27th, so maybe we can come in on the 31st.
Yeah, and maybe some of the quiet voices too.
Yeah, I'll see who wants to. Oh, yeah, because we'll have pretty much everyone here by then. And yeah, it feels really special. And then we'll have this documentary that will come from all the messages and from footage of other. We're going to have a youth and elder council potentially on November 6th that we're organizing with potentially at the one of the schools on the island, and potentially a cultural sharing on November 5th, where we'd like the elders just really want to connect with the people and share who they are and hear what the people have to say and really stoke our heart fires, because right now it's easy to get lost in all the confusion of what's going wrong and how do we create sparks of hope and belonging and remembering humans are amazing when we're allowed to shine and when we see the best in each other.
And so there's going to be some elders from Kauai also, from the Hawaiian community?
Yes, we have elders from Kauai.
And so you said on the 5th at Waipa.
Well, we're not sure yet of that location. We're still we're still organizing it, but November 5th, we're organizing a culture sharing is our ideal. So once we have more information, it'll be on the Heartbeat of Kauai, and we'll be able to tell on October 31st more information. But I just wanted to come in and plant those seeds of...
Okay, because I want to go.
Yeah, and I really want to welcome people, too. If anyone feels inspired to volunteer and come cook food or help, you know, just welcome these elders. Like, they are our guests from all over the world coming here to share their mana'o'o, and we're really grateful for their long journeys to get here.
Yeah, and I just want to acknowledge again, Ilarion has come and taught at my class, and I have gone to, I think, two or three events where he has been a teacher at or a speaker at, and I've learned so much from him. He's very, a very special individual. He's from an Aleutian island, right? He's an elder from one of the Aleut islands?
Exactly. The Pribilof Islands are the little chain islands at the tip of Alaska. So he's of the Unangan people, and they're some of the most amazing boat people. They have kayaks made out of sealskin that actually have ball bearings so they can flex in the ocean, and they're very incredible people. And Alarion's a remarkable man because he was raised traditionally in the islands, but then, like many natives, was sent to boarding school and university to be modernized. And so he plays this amazing bridge role where he has the ancient wisdom, but he also, like, he used to be the head of all the Alaska Native fisheries and marina corporations. So he was managing multi-millions of dollars, and he was the head of Nature Conservancy of Alaska. So he teaches all over the world at conferences, so he really grasps the bigger human story, and he has incredible compassion and humility to listen to what is needed.
Humility definitely is something that he's a humble man.
Do the elders that are coming place any special significance on Kauai itself as a place, and any special importance to having this gathering here?
I would imagine that is there. I have not asked specifically, and I will share. I actually had a dream about it being here on Kauai, and I shared it with Larry, and he goes, oh, that's prophetic, because that's one of the places that I'm feeling it needs to happen. So Kauai has called it in her own way, and we're hearing the call. Mm-hmm. And I do feel, metaphorically, just these vibrations of prayers and global healing and honoring is going to ripple through the waters around the world. And through these messages and films that will come from it.
And so will the elders, they will be setting the whole agenda or conversation tone, right? They will be the ones bringing up what they see as critical. I know for Alarion, his people, because they're really far north, they have a particularly strong insight into the climactic change that's happening.
Absolutely. A lot of Alaska Natives are, so to speak, front line of seeing really dramatic changes. So he definitely has tapped into that. And yes, it will be an open kind of talking spirit circle. In fact, Auntie Sabra is one of our Hawaiian elders, and yesterday we were asking her of a sacred object we could have to just be like a talking object, and she's going to bring a beautiful gourd, and metaphorically to have this space to allow the wisdom to be held and shared feels appropriate.
I'm so looking forward to it. There are so many important issues there, and I'm wondering, you don't happen to know which topics they're doing, because you're not part of that. You're just helping to facilitate it.
And literally, there will be no agenda. It will be, you know, council meetings. They'll be having time periods, and whatever arises that needs to be addressed will be brought forth from their hearts and spirit.
I remember that, like, what I am often left with when I have had the interaction with Alarion and some of the others, but mostly I know Alarion, is that he brings up things that I hadn't even ever thought of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I go, wow, I hadn't thought of that. But they're very important. And, you know, when we're talking about, like, the homeless and the weather and all that, it's like we had just been speaking on people without housing, and now when we're seeing all these intense storms and fires, and, you know, the displacement is going to be profound. So I will be really curious, you know, where that comes into play there. I think, like, if we were able to shed the dominant culture, probably most of those problems would be solved. Most of those problems happen as a result of hoarding, is the way I look at it. People hoard money and power. It seems to be an addiction, you know. So when people need more capacity than any one person really needs to have, it's why we have so much.
And that's the core value system there of not belonging, not feeling connected to life force and to others. And so that's why, to me, it's about, well, and Alarion says the messages are, how do we get people from their heads into their hearts? because when we're living from our hearts, we are connected to each other and to the earth and to all the elements of creation that sustain life. But when we're just operating from our heads, as he says, you cannot solve a problem from the same consciousness that created it. So when we're always in our heads, we're just spinning our wheels in the same game, the same merry-go-round. But when you drop into your heart, the heart always knows what's needed because it's real, it's embodied, it's palpable, and it is practical and human and humane. And so these messages are urgent now because we can't keep spinning our wheels in our heads trying to figure these problems out. We have to show up with our hearts to each other and to the earth and to all our relations, the whales, the waters. So many beings are being neglected and pushed aside because of our own human scarcity. And so we need to uplift that abundant place in our heart that we all come from.
Is there a contact number or person if a listener wanted to learn more about this, or is there a website?
Not currently a website. I'm happy to put out my name and number because I'm one of the main coordinators at the moment. Also, people can go to Heartbeat of Kauai, look for the Wisdom Weavers ad that I just put up today. It may not be up yet. It needs to be approved.
Yeah, I'm not seeing
okay,
it yet.
Okay, yeah. It'll come up in the next day or two. And
do you want to post, share that to Felicia's Facebook page when it goes up, maybe?
Sure, yeah. That would be great. Yeah, we're trying to get the food and the lodging first, and then social media is coming.
Right.
What is your phone number?
Yeah, so I can be reached. My name is Kelly, and I can be reached at 303-808-343-2430. And and along those lines, if people want to help and volunteer, donate funds, anything that you want to do to support these elders and this important message, it takes a village. You know, to raise a child and to raise each other. So we're just calling in the support and the care of the community to really welcome these elders and their messages so they can get out as strongly as possible into the world.
So it's kind of like when we welcomed in the Hokulea, there, you know, people come together. Jazz with John is coming up at the top of the hour, and just giving a shout out to Kauai Community Radio, which works tirelessly as a venue for the people to be learning about what's coming up and what's going on. And you can help to support KKCR Stay on the Air. We're in our 20th year, and we need to make it to 21. We need you. And one way is to be in the Wave Rider program.
KKCR's Wave Rider program will make a huge splash during our upcoming fall fund drive starting on November 2nd. For a tax-deductible donation of just $175, a brief message about your business or event will surf the airwaves during every two-hour program throughout our 14-day fundraiser. That's over 100 announcements. This is a great opportunity to promote your business or upcoming event and support Kauai Community Radio. Wave Rider forms are available at kkcr.org or call us at 808-826-7774. Early sign-up guarantees the most airtime for your donated dollars. Reserve your spot in the lineup today.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. I do want to just say on November 8th, the Navy is going to be having a public meeting. So if people want to talk to them about the whales, they can do that.
A meeting about that?
They're meeting about their whole program of what they do in the ocean.
Okay.
I will look for where it is. And speaking about the ocean, I do see that we had really a high bacterial count in a number of the waters around. It's called the Hawaii Southern California Training and Testing Public Involvement Process. And so in Lihue, it is Wednesday, November 8th at the Kauai Veterans Center Main Ballroom, and that would be from 4 to 8 p.m. They tend to have a charrette there and with a bunch of specialists from each different area. Kelly, couple other little things that I had listed down here just to bring up that might be something that you can comment on. I just want to bring up the Me Too movement that's out there. We've had a lot of media on this guy, Harvey Weinstein. I don't even know who he is. He's a movie maker who is getting in trouble for acting like the way a lot of men act. Actually, like, you read it and you go, well, you know.
That's pretty regular.
That's pretty, you know, it's probably 25% of them, you know, are pretty bad that way. there's a whole different range of how, you know, most guys aren't like that, but there's definitely some like that. We're seeing that we have a president of the United States who is pretty powerfully like that. And so I think for most women, we're not shocked. It's like not horrified. I mean, disgusted, yes. Familiar, yes. But so I just want to, you know, probably on another show because we don't have a lot of time on that. But with the Me Too, I was thinking about this when we were talking about war. And when people have been in war, I'm sure there's no way somebody who hasn't been in war can get what that means. And I think that, like, when people have been violently raped or really manipulated in very terrible ways and coerced, or they lose a job because they don't capitulate to bad behavior, or they don't tolerate it, or they're so used to having inappropriate requests that it's just a normal part of life, like it's kind of pretty normal part of life. But I think unless, and some guys do go through that kind of bullying, there's definitely, I just don't think it happens as much. And it might be that guys are outpowered by some other guy. But for girls, it is much more. So I just want to acknowledge the Me Too movement, because it's almost everybody.
Well, what is that? I'm not familiar.
Have you seen it?
No.
People are putting Me Too. So like when Harvey Weinstein.
This is on Facebook.
This is on,
in particular.
On Facebook or on Instagram. Like, what's happened to some of the women who he has mauled, and people don't really want to say how badly they've been mauled, right? So sometimes they'll just say Me Too, because it's like, ugh, you know, who even wants, it's a really shaming and awful experience. And I noticed that some guys are being really noble about responding to it, and some guys are like, well, you deserved it, you know, or whatever, but there is, or they're assuming it's the very gentle end of the range of boys just being animals, which, you know, I mean, that's an easier side of it. But there is a powerful Me Too. It's like, so when you see it, it's almost every girl is a Me Too. Almost every woman has been hurt and abused sexually or violently, or have had a problem. And I just want to acknowledge that that's out there, and the Me Too. And so when they're, because we are talking about poverty or houselessness, and actually that Me Too often ties in to houselessness. And I think that happens across all cultures. No doubt it happens in the indigenous cultures just as much as it happens in dominant cultures. And so... You're nodding your head, but yes, right?
And it's the same thing of people needing to feel honored and witnessed and connected and safe. And there's so, and it's just this time, it's all coming to the surface, and we have more avenues for people to tell their story and be witnessed. So that's a good part. At least the healing is being sharing and being seen.
Yeah. I think it's, like, for me, it doesn't bring up negativity. It's kind of actually pretty warm that, you know, everybody's going, yeah, me too.
It's like building
almost
a camaraderie.
Everybody is saying, this is a problem. We have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm going to turn down my phone real quick. Sorry. You
yes.
know me. I've called many times. I just want to say that I don't think it's almost everybody. It is everybody, at least those who have a consciousness about what it means to have a voice, and what it means to be denied a voice, what it means to be denied the right to any kind of freedom of anything in your life. And I have been working recently in an environment where the men, I have to say men, there aren't any women doing this in the work that I do, are of the deeply, deeply ingrained belief and attitude that women are subservient. And so every day I do most of my work on an inner plane level of holding up the light and keeping that energy bright and strong, that I have a voice, that I am a strong goddess, and I exist, and I am real, and I am powerful. And I know that every woman, when she wakes up, will know that this is a thing that must be healed and needs to be expressed, discussed, and resolved with open hearts for true balance. God, goddess, You cannot be a god without a goddess.
Thank
so let
you.
Let us find that.
Thank you so much. We're almost at the top of the hour, so thank you for calling that in.
Thank, yeah.
Thanks
thank
for shining you. Your light. Yeah.
Yes. Aloha. Uh-huh. So, yes, I think that when people do shine lights, it makes it more aware. And I think social media hasn't been a part of our past. And so when we have this broad range of many, many voices speaking out, this seems like an incredibly gentle movement. But and I think it's a reflection of when we have a world leader who is like the personification of,
less desirable qualities.
Less desirable qualities. I don't mean to slam the guy, but boy, guilty on that one, right? So even just hearing him speak, in almost any of those things, it's pretty big.
And things have to be seen before they can be healed. So he's playing an important role of bringing a lot to the surface.
Yeah, playing an important role and bringing a lot to the surface. So we're just about out of the show. We're going to have the county council report coming up. And I did look over what is coming up more on this short-range transit plan. I think that's going to go through. That is really about improving the buses. Definitely a demand to add for veteran services, add for strengthening the houselessness challenge and fixing it. You know, I don't mean strengthen the problem, but strengthen the effort to address it. And then there is also the the legislative package to go to the Hawaii State Association of Counties. So it's what we are going to be saying, this is what we need to do. So many, many important things tomorrow. I do give my gratitude out to all our elected officials of trying to do a good job. It is much harder than people think. I might not agree with all of them, but I try and give them the benefit of the doubt, and I know that there's a lot of big efforts to work on. So we say aloha, Jake.
Aloha, thank you.
Aloha, Kelly. Again, aloha. November 5th.
Well, November 2nd aloha. Through 4th will be the sunrise ceremonies, and November 5th we'll have a culture sharing, and we'll come on the air October 31st with the details.
And no, the 2nd through the 4th, though, that's a closed event.
No,
right?
Those are open public sunrise ceremonies, and we'll have those if people check the Heartbeat of Kauai Wisdom Weavers ad.
We can come to that. Okay.
Yeah.
But only in the morning, right? And the
yes.
rest of the day is just the council. The council. Okay.
Yeah. Rita, real quick last call expressing appreciation for the show and the topics that we cover. Felicia, Jake, thanks for being in here. Kelly, thanks for coming in. Felicia, thanks a lot. Aloha, everyone.
Okay, Marshall, aloha. So Woo-hoo. Here's the county council report, and then Jazz with John is up right after.